and Wes Collins in the studio once again. Good day, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today, Cecil?
Well, today we thought we would speak about homeowners associations, mm-hmm. The great democracy. You know, Ben, it's interesting. So many of our real property interests are connected in some way, where there are associations, restrictive mm-hmm. covenants mm-hmm. that govern the property that we own.
Right.
And it's very important that folks who are buying, purchasers understand, the nature of exactly, the impact of these homeowner associations, the restrictive covenants, guidelines, if you will, rules, regulations that apply to their property. Now, if we're a rural property where we're fee simple ownership, not in a subdivision, not in a controlled environment in any way, then these things don't apply.
Right.
But more and more, Ben, as our listeners know, that seems to be becoming the exception to the rule.
Indeed. I mean, even unzoned areas.
Even unzoned areas. Any new developments mm-hmm. seem to have some controls, some mm-hmm. restrictions in place. And so the interplay between these associations, these restrictions, and of course the homeowners is always a very active, area in our office.
Okay. And homeowners associations then become that quasi-governmental body, right?
That's right, Ben. You know, a lot of times, almost every time, you know, we're dealing with homeowners associations, the board of directors, who's really ends mm-hmm. up being the governing body, who's mm-hmm. elected into office, or should be elected into their position as board members through the actual owners in the subdivision. You know, they usually don't have a whole lot of experience or education as it relates to, you know, managing mm-hmm. property.
Right.
And especially managing their own neighbors. So, you know, homeowners associations through their board of directors, you know, usually the individuals try to do the best they can, but inherent in that situation is, you know, sometimes conflict, sometimes problems, sometimes questions, sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, the appearance of favoritism, you know, these kind of things. So, you know, when we have, you know, non-professionals, basically volunteers stepping up to try to mm-hmm. manage a subdivision, homeowners association, it's kind of a recipe to a certain degree for, you know, some legal issues to come up.
Well, you know, we can go all levels of government and find a similar kind of situation where people are having to rely on other people who are experts to help them, advise them. They may be good at being able to delegate or to then assimilate some of the information, but very few people are experts in property management.
Well, that's true. That's true. But you know,
or in governing, for that matter.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, larger. I think that there's a trend in North Carolina in larger areas, less rural areas than eastern North Carolina mm-hmm. of more professional management in homeowners associations. And we're seeing that some.
Even here we see that.
Some here, yeah, mm-hmm. but more in the Wake County and the Mecklenburg County and the, you know, bigger areas. And that we are seeing that more, but still, you know, a lot of associations just can't afford that, you know, mm-hmm. and because they've got to, you know, they got to pay for their roads and they've got to keep their lights on and they've got to keep the grounds maintained and, you know, do all the things that, you know, homeowners associations, subdivisions have to do. And, you know, how do they pay for that? Mm-hmm. Well, through dues.
Right.
You know, obviously all of the individuals have to pay their dues. As members of the association or risk, you know, a lien.
Or assessments, yes.
Right.
So, but that's where attorney comes in. I mean, that can, that understands the law as it relates, North Carolina law as it relates to homeowners associations.
That's right. And, you know, I would say that, having a good attorney on the front end, mm-hmm. as far as dealing with, the management of the association, you know, navigating even the things relatively simple, such as the meetings.
Mm-hmm.
How do I conduct the meetings? How do I give the notices? you know, how do I, what happens if we have someone who's violating the covenants? You know, my experience is that if you have a good attorney on the front end of these issues, then you're going to save money and probably some headaches later on, you know, because the attorney's going to help you navigate the law, navigate the Planned Community Act, navigate the covenants, navigate the bylaws, the articles of incorporation, so we follow the law in administering the respective subdivision based on that issue we're dealing with.
Well, so. Cecil, that goes back to what we talk about all the time, really, is that you get the good advice on the front end, whether it's estate planning or governing in a homeowners association, you're going to be better off down the line. It's going to save you money down the line.
Well, you really are.
And aggravation.
And we see that routinely. It's hard for these associations to from the get-go retain legal counsel and require that the legal counsel attend their meetings and be at the board of director meetings and then the homeowner. I have to pride the Beacons Reach community, which is a local community, community with these kinds of restrictions and homeowner associations, various homeowner associations. But one of the things that they really have done right through the years is have legal counsel on retainer that was very active with their associations. And I think it has proved to be a big advantage to that particular community, you know, over at the Indian Beach, you know, on Bogue Banks.
Right. And a big guy. That's a big community.
That's a big community, and it's well managed and well operated. I haven't seen that many lawsuits out of the Beacons Reach community as a result of, I think, good legal advice. And I'm talking about, you know, kind of that, you know, generic, organic, day-to-day advice, which is what you're talking about, Ben.
Exactly.
Right.
Wes, a lot of the callers that we've had in the past that talk about it are generally centered around a couple of things. What is the rights of the board? I mean, what can they enforce versus what the covenants say? And what if I don't even have, I mean, I've never even seen the covenants before.
Right. Well, those are two issues, of course. You know, when we're talking about governing the association itself, you know, the board of directors is going to be the entity that is going to have an obligation to follow those bylaws and follow those covenants and enforce those. Now, there might be some, you know, subcommittees or committees that are put in place. Most notable would be an architectural control committee. That's usually what yours truly is dealing with when we're talking about a conflict.
Right.
You know, someone who's failing to comply with the covenants and restrictions, or someone who the board thinks is failing to comply with the covenants and restrictions.
Somebody
and
puts up a shed in their back.
And then we get into interpretation of the language of the covenants, or their rules of the Architectural Control Committee, maybe dealing with the Architectural Control Committee, you know, or the board. But the board really is kind of the buck stops with the board, basically, as far as the decision making goes.
Right.
You've got to look at your governing documents as well. I mean, the board can't just summarily, in most cases, unless your governing documents state it, increase the dues without a vote, for example. They may not be able to borrow money for the association without a vote. I mean, a vote of the property owners.
Right.
I mean, you might need 50% or more, a majority. You might need 2/3, 75%, the covenants and sometimes the bylaws, but primarily the covenants and these type issues, would be what we would look to determine what needs to go to a vote. And I think also, you know, when you're dealing with a confrontational issue, a contentious issue, and the board is trying to make a decision as to what to do about repaving the roads or about, whatever, borrow money if in the event they don't want to do a special assessment to fix those roads.
Right.
Then the board should at least consider putting those type issues to an association vote, membership vote. Then you've got to do the notices and have a meeting and, you know, have the vote, and because that's going to keep the board out of hot water.
Right.
You know, just because the board thinks that these roads need to be repaved and $100,000 needs to be spent to on these roads doesn't mean that a majority of the property owners are going to agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And you could create some, you know, internal strife there if you stick your neck out a little bit.
One of these things these boards have in common when we talked about corporations and corporate law is that they have to behave. They have to behave.
Well, they
like
are
they
a corporation.
Are. Yeah.
Exactly. They're a nonprofit. They have to behave like one, and they have to, you know, really provide due process and provide a fair
mm-hmm.
process to, you know, the individuals. They're basically their constituents, which
mm-hmm.
are the owners.
Yes.
You know,
right.
And that's the way that works.
Okay. Again, we'll have more coming up in a moment on homeowners associations. If you have that question, perhaps you've run into that problem and you would like to relate that with us, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674 here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Remember, you can go on their website, harvellandcollins.com, and listen to past shows. And we'll have more to come in a moment. Hey, welcome back. This is Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. And thanks for joining us here today on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins every Tuesday morning. Cecil and Wes in the studio with us. We're talking about homeowners associations.
I think, Ben, where we were heading was, you know, it's so active. It's so common, that is a better word for these board of directors to be inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
This is something we run into constantly. They're very, very active board mm-hmm. for 2 or 3 years.
Right, right.
And then the board, because of personalities on the board, becomes inactive.
Changes. People. Yeah.
And doesn't enforce the rules with the same vigor
mm-hmm.
And vitality that the mm-hmm. prior board did. Or, you know, the rules have really not been enforced, and now all of a sudden there's this board that comes in that's really going to clean it up, you
mm-hmm.
know, and really do everything by the letter of the law, and everybody's
right.
shocked into bewilderment as a result
new
of
sheriff
that.
In town.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, again, I have to hold out certain ones as being, you know, when they're that consistency is nice.
Mm-hmm. And again, this is where you probably in your office, Wes, get the complaints where people are saying, all of a sudden, now they want to enforce this.
Right.
20 years we haven't
right,
had this.
Right. Well, Joe across the street has a garage like that, and they
yeah.
won't let me have one, you know, that
right.
kind of thing. And, you know, that's certainly a valid argument. I mean, you want to be treated equally, but you do have to realize that, you know, we might have, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 years of enforcement ahead of us or
mm-hmm.
lack of enforcement. It
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean that just because a new board comes into power that they have to, you know, do exactly what the previous board did or, enforce the covenants as strictly as maybe you think they should
mm-hmm.
or be more lenient like you think they should.
Right.
You know, and really in most sets of covenants, if you'll get down into the meat of the covenants, they have language in them indicating that any failure to enforce in the past will not serve as an estoppel to mm-hmm. enforcement at a later date.
Right.
Something like
right.
that. So,
which guards against the, you know, the swings of the pendulum of a board.
Yeah. That's right. And also, you know, you have to realize that there's certain statute of limitations that come in. You know, if there's
mm-hmm.
a fence and the fence is not in compliance with the covenants and never was in compliance with the covenants, and it's been there more than 6 years, then a new board can't do anything about it anyway. It's
mm-hmm.
called an incorporeal hereditament. That's a legal word for you.
A couple of things,
It's a six-year statute on those type breaches because
mm-hmm.
it's open. Everybody can see that it was there, but nothing was done about it for 6 years.
Right.
So, you know, boards can't go back and clean up everything in an association that's got a little age on it as a matter of law anyway, and it probably would not be a good idea, you know, as well.
Exactly. Yeah. You'd be mowing down a lot of things.
Right. It's going to just create a lot of conflict in the association.
I would imagine one of the biggest, I know from other callers in the past, one of the biggest conflicts is the difference between a covenant and bylaws. And people get confused.
Absolutely. Attorneys don't get confused at all about that,
right.
But you know, it's amazing. You get involved, with an association, and a lot of times these members of the association just interchange bylaws and covenants, and covenants and declarations are basically the same thing. And then
mm-hmm.
bylaws is a document for managing the association with regard to like organization of meetings and those mm-hmm. type things.
It's the operating system of the association.
Quorum.
Quorum, just those type issues.
Mm-hmm.
In bylaws, you don't restrict the use of someone's real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Covenants or declaration, same thing. Document, that's the document that restricts someone's use of their real estate.
Right.
And that's a really important issue in the law because, you know, when you set up a subdivision, the developer is going to put those covenants or declarations on record before mm-hmm. they sell the first lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they sell the first lot and close on it, and then they put the declaration on record later, that first lot is not going to be subject to those declarations
right.
and covenants. So, because that is the document that restricts your use of property. That's the document that says that all houses have to be at least 1,800 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
Dues are going to be so much.
That
you can't park a boat in the driveway. You know, things like that. If the declaration or covenant's not on record first, then it's not going to restrict the use of property.
And covenants are hard to change, right?
Well, you look to the language of the covenants to change the covenants.
Mm-hmm.
And normally we're going to see a vote of the membership, 2/3,
like
75%,
yeah.
something like that. But you look to that language to make that determination. That mm-hmm. will be within the document itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, a lot of times we're kind of shotgunning things here today, just
right.
talking about general questions. A lot of times we get questions, well, you know, Mr. Collins, there wasn't anything in my deed at all about these covenants.
Right.
How can I be bound by these covenants when they're not in my deed? Well, if they were on record, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
If they were on record, meaning recorded in the courthouse, in your chain of title, then it doesn't matter if your deed references those or not.
You're that's still, the due diligence of the buyer then.
That's right. You're on notice. You're on record notice of that. Therefore, mm-hmm. you're subject to those restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I have had this question before because I live in an area that does not have a homeowners association, but covenants still exist.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Is that, and I was curious about that.
So the road is probably owned by whom? Not
the
association.
Road.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we see that sometimes where there's covenants,
mm-hmm.
you know, but there's not common area
mm-hmm.
to maintain. And the covenants are really just to maintain some uniformity in how you develop your property.
Right.
And I don't really see that in new developments being mm-hmm. set up, but maybe that was something that was done in the 60s, 70s, 80s.
Probably so, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, but we're still having to live with it like you are.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
but who's policing it?
Yeah. Again, there's no real enforcement of that.
You probably could do that individually if you wanted to.
If you wanted to.
Right.
We'll have more to come in a moment here on Coastal Daybreak. And Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, as we continue on. Your questions are welcome. And also, you can remember to call them for that appointment, too, to ask about your situation, 252-726-9050. That's 252-726-9050, online at harvellandcollins.com. Hey, welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, talking about homeowners associations as well. And again, that kind of governance of homeowners associations, if you are get the right advice at the front end, you can save some of these headaches we've talked about, right?
Yeah, Ben, and I've seen it many times over the years snowball into a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the things that Cecil and I and any, you know, attorney, good attorney dealing with these issues is really going to try to do for their client is to keep them out of that snowball effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we could get into problems with homeowners associations and subdivisions that really become a huge legal problem,
sure.
maybe legal problem and financial problem.
Both, if, yeah. If, knowing we have them in this community where somebody had old style covenants that expired.
Right.
Right.
Right. And, you know, issues that really you can't get out of easily,
mm-hmm.
where on the front end, you know, if you had good legal advice dealing with the particular issue, it might not be much of an issue at all as long as it's dealt with, you know, properly on the front end.
Yes.
So, yeah, I see it time and time again. And, you know, we've been in court on many homeowners association cases and taken mm-hmm. homeowners association cases up to the Court of Appeals. So very involved in it, but in most of those cases, and I would venture to say all of those cases. You know, a little bit of good legal advice and a little bit of reasonableness and a little bit of communication on the front end probably could keep you or any homeowners association out of that snowball effect, which is, you know, obviously what we would want to do.
I mean, we talk about moving targets of taxes and things like that as in terms of estate planning. Does a state law on homeowners change much, or is it pretty firm?
Well, you know, the law with regard to bylaws and covenants is, you know, it is what it is as far as those documents being enforceable. The Planned Community Act under North Carolina General Statute 47F has had some changes over the years. It's not a very old statute, but it is a statute that was put in place that was designed to basically help facilitate uniform control and management of homeowners associations where maybe there were some voids in governing documents. And we've seen some case law interpretation of 47F, and we've seen some amendment of 47F over the past, 15 years or so. I think it's been in place almost 20 now, but that's not that long really in the law. So it does change some, but not very often.
Yeah. I know one recent case involving, this area was, I think, a case where, one developer or one speculator owned so many units in a particular place when they went bankrupt or didn't pay dues. Then the homeowners association essentially was sunk.
Well, that's basically the way that works sometimes. You know, if we're talking about maybe an upstart subdivision that just doesn't get off the ground and maybe we have half of the lot sold and then, you know, the property value tanks and these individuals who buy the lots are subject to foreclosures and then who do the owners become?
Right.
The banks.
Right.
The banks are then the owners, and they have an obligation to then pay the dues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a kind of a weird, you know, place to be. But, you know, the banks of the world, if they own property, they'll tell you we have an obligation to pay those dues because then the association could certainly, you know, foreclose on the properties, you know, under the Planned Community Act or the covenants against the banks.
So. Again, good reason to get that advice up front as often as possible for all of these things. And call the folks at Harvell and Collins to arrange that meeting too. 252-726-9050. That's 252-726-9050. On the web at harvellandcollins.com and 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.